Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from John Russell, Dan Novak, Gregory Stockel, and Faith Perlow. Later, Katie Weaver and Ashley will present the next part in our series on America's national parks. But first, here is John Russell.
American farmers are having crop production problems at a time when many countries are facing a food crisis. The United States is the world's fourth largest wheat exporter. Russia's invasion of Ukraine in February stopped shipments of nearly a third of the world's wheat exports. Little has gone right for wheat supplies since then. Concerns about food supplies have increased because of worsening harvest possibilities in China and parts of Europe. In addition to that, major producer India has banned wheat exports because of a bad spring harvest there. The United Nations has warned the effect of the war on grains, oils, fuel, and fertilizer could result in hunger for millions of people. The U.S. government has been calling on American farmers to plant more winter wheat this autumn. The government said it also would permit planting on some environmentally sensitive land beginning this autumn. But a drought and costly farm materials could limit production gains, grain experts say. There are two wheat crops in the United States, spring wheat and winter wheat. Both are in trouble. In the southern U.S. plains, winter wheat farmers have received very little rain and are concerned about the size of their harvest. Kansas farmers may not harvest thousands of hectares of wheat in fields this year because of drought damage. Extremely wet spring weather in the northern U.S. plains will also likely reduce crop production this year. In North Dakota, a big April storm left the state's large fields under more than 1 meter of snow in some areas, causing floods as the snow melted. The U.S. Department of Agriculture says farmers have only planted 49% of planned spring wheat as of May 22nd. North Dakota produces about half of the U.S. spring wheat. There, growers have planted just 27% of their crop, the second lowest amount in around 40 years. Some farmers have not turned a wheel yet, said North Dakota Agriculture Commissioner Doug Gehring. He added that if farmers are not able to plant a lot of crops quickly, the effects on the world market could be bad. A private group visiting wheat fields in Kansas in mid-May predicted more fields than normal might go unharvested because of drought damage. About 6% of the state's planted hectares would be abandoned, the latest USDA estimates suggest. But given the drought damage, Kansas State University wheat expert Romolo Lilato thinks the abandonment rate could be higher. In neighboring Colorado, abandonment could top 30%, Colorado Wheat Executive Director Brad Erker told tour participants. Wheat yields are affected by weather in May, and we've had a really dry May, said Kansas farmer Vance Emke. U.S. wheat production has been decreasing because farmers have been planting more corn and soybeans. These crops can produce more profit. Seed Science also has increased yields by 30% or more since 2000. Wheat's yield has increased only 6%. As the planting period in the Northern Plains narrows, North Dakota farmers are considering other plans. These include changing to soybeans, which can be planted later in the spring. Another possibility is to fill out documents for crop insurance claims to limit farm losses. It's pretty tempting to file those claims, North Dakota farmer Dwight Grotberg said. Once you get into June, you might be lucky to get half a crop, and with costs as high as they are, that's hard to stomach. I'm John Russell.
An international team of scientists is using artificial intelligence, or AI, to study the underwater sounds made by coral to learn more about the sea creatures. Coral are very small animals that create huge rock-like structures called reefs in warm seawater. The team of scientists listened to underwater sound recordings taken off islands in central Indonesia to learn. They found coral reefs make many sounds and are full of animal and plant life. Scientists from British and Indonesian universities published their findings last month in Ecological Indicators. The researchers used hundreds of sound recordings to train a computer program to track the health of a coral reef by listening to it. A healthy reef has a complex, crackling, campfire-like sound. That is because of all the creatures living on and in it. The team's lead researcher, Ben Williams, said an unhealthy reef sounds desolate. The AI system gathers data like the frequency and loudness of sounds in the recordings. From that information, the AI system can find out about 92% of the time whether a reef is healthy or unhealthy, the study said. The scientists hope the AI system will help conservation groups around the world track the health of coral reefs. The researchers also hope to collect underwater recordings from reefs in Australia, Mexico, and the Virgin Islands to help track the progress of projects to rebuild coral. Scientists say coral reefs are being damaged by carbon gas emissions. They say heat-trapping carbon gases are warming ocean surfaces by 0.13 degrees every 10 years. They also say ocean acidity has increased 30% since the beginning of the industrial era. The Global Coral Reef Monitoring Network, a United Nations-supported group, says 14% of coral around the world was lost between 2009 and 2018. Coral reefs cover less than 1% of the ocean floor, but they support more than 25% of marine life, including turtles, fish, and lobster. Coral reefs are very important to the fishing industry. I'm Dan Novak.
Sam may not look like most superheroes. After all, he is a dog. He has four legs and fur. But like all superheroes, Sam has a superpower. His special skill is collecting waste or garbage to set a good example for visitors. Sam uses his superpower to help clean a large park in Chile's capital city, Santiago. He even wears a green cape, a piece of clothing that many superheroes wear. Sam's superpower started with walks in Santiago's Metropolitan Park with his owner, Gonzalo Chiang. Chiang said he and the dog would find and pick up a lot of garbage along the way, from plastic bottles to face coverings. Chiang said, "From that, the need to come prepared to take away the garbage that we found on each visit arose." In just 1 month, Sam and Chiang collected 602 face coverings, 585 bottles, and 304 cans. Chiang said, "The walk is a good opportunity to clean rather than litter." To litter means to throw or leave garbage on the ground in a public place. Park officials were pleased with Sam and Chiang's effort. In fact, they decided to use Sam's image for their campaign, urging visitors to take better care of the park. Artist Catalina Arabena turned Sam into a cartoon character. A cartoon is a series of designs or drawings that tell a story. Sam's story is called Sam, the Parque Met Superhero. Parque Met is what most locals call Santiago's Metropolitan Park. Arabena said the cartoon became much more widespread than expected. She added, "It reached different schools and it has been spread very well on social media." Park officials launched anti-littering campaigns last year. They urged food and drink sellers within the park to use glass containers instead of plastic, and to sort garbage into separate containers. Eduardo Villalobos is the park's acting director. He said Sam and Gonzalo have inspired park leaders to strengthen their efforts related to educating the public and collecting waste. I'm Gregory Stockel.
Alphabet has only 26 letters, but there are over 44 sounds. This can be a problem for English learners. Today, on Everyday Grammar, we will learn about the past tense ending, ed, for regular verbs. We will learn that it is pronounced differently depending on the letters it follows. The suffix ed is used to form the regular past tense of a verb or as a past participle ending. We use the past tense to talk about things happening before the present or about completed action. For example, I listened to music this morning at the gym. I helped my neighbor water her garden. I waited all day for my brother to call me. These are all examples of the simple past tense of regular verbs. Did you notice any difference? Listen again to the way that each verb is pronounced. Listened, helped, waited. The ed ending of all three verbs sounds different. Listened has a d sound at the end. Helped has a t sound at the end. And waited has an id sound. When we speak, air causes the vocal cords to move, producing sound. That sound can be changed using parts of our mouth and tongue to produce words. If we produce a sound with our vocal cords, we create a vibration that we can feel. Place your hand on your throat while speaking to feel the vibration. These sounds are called voiced sounds. Voiced sounds include all vowels. In addition, the consonants b, g, d, v, and z are voiced. So are m, n, l, r, y, j, and voiced v sound, as in the word the. For example, the verbs roam, believe, and enjoy end in voiced sounds. Voiceless sounds do not use the vocal cords to produce the sound, so you will not feel a vibration when you say them. Voiceless consonants include p, k, t, s, f, sh, ch, and voiceless f, like in the word teeth. Verbs that have voiceless sounds at the end include watch, help, and laugh. We have three rules in English to help decide how to pronounce ed endings for regular past tense verbs. 1. If the last letter of the regular verb ends in a voiced consonant or a vowel sound, pronounce the ed ending as just d. For example, roam, roamed. Believe, believed. Enjoy, enjoyed. 2. If the last letter of the regular verb ends in a voiceless consonant, pronounce the ed ending as just t. For example, watch, watched. Help, helped. Laugh, laughed. 3. Finally, if the regular verb ends in either a t sound or a d sound, pronounce the ed ending as id, which creates a separate syllable at the end of the verb. For example, need, needed. Want, wanted. Decide, decided. Let us look at these rules in action with an example from a song by Taylor Swift called Cardigan. Try to hear the different ways Taylor pronounces the verbs with ed as she sings. To kiss and go. The first past tense verb is needed. We can hear that needed has an id sound at the end. That is because the verb need ends in a d sound. The next verb is marked. Mark ends in the voiceless consonant k. So the voiceless ed ending t is used. Lastly, we have tried. The verb try ends in a vowel sound I. All vowels are voiced, so use the voiced sound d as our ed ending. Today, we learned that the pronunciation of the ed ending for regular verbs in the past tense changes. The correct pronunciation depends on the ending of the root verb. Different pronunciations are used if the root verb ends in a voiced sound, a voiceless consonant, or a t or d sound. Here is a list of regular verbs. Can you guess how they are pronounced in the past tense? Mix, play, repeat, cook, gather. And finally, listen to your favorite songs in English. If the song is in the past tense, can you hear which sounds are used for the regular past tense? Is it a d sound, a t sound, or an id sound? I'm Faith Perlow.
Our National Parks journey across the United States takes us to southwestern Colorado. We are visiting a large U.S. national park called Mesa Verde. It was established to protect the culture of ancient Native Americans. Mesa Verde National Park is over 100 years old. In 1906, then-President Theodore Roosevelt signed a bill creating the park. Mesa Verde offers visitors a look into the lives of the ancestral Pueblo people, who lived in the area between 700 and 1,400 years ago. The national park protects almost 5,000 archaeological sites. They are some of the best preserved archaeological areas in the country.
The term Mesa Verde is Spanish for green table. Early Spanish explorers gave the name to the area. In geology, a mesa is a flat-topped highland with steep sides. Mesa Verde is not actually a mesa. It is a cuesta, a term used to describe a hill with a sharp drop on one side and a soft, gentle slope on the other. A more correct name for the national park, then, would be Cuesta Verde. The gently sloping side of Mesa Verde was important in the formation of the 600 cliff dwellings within the park. Cliff dwellings are living areas that were set up in caves, the large open areas in the side of the cliff.
Mesa Verde rises more than 540 meters above the ground. Visitors can drive to the top of the hill on a winding mountain road. In the distance are the flatlands and mountains of an area called the Four Corners. That is where the western states of Colorado, Utah, New Mexico, and Arizona meet. Some of the ruins in the Four Corners area are from the earliest people who lived there. They were hunters and gatherers, now known as basket makers. The basket makers lived in simple caves. The first evidence that ancient people had moved to Mesa Verde is from about 1,500 years ago. Those people lived in pit houses, large holes in the ground with wood and mud covering the top. In the 8th century, the early Pueblo people began building square structures of large connected rooms, or pueblos, above ground. More than 300 years later, they climbed down the canyon walls and began building cliff dwellings.
Today, visitors to Mesa Verde National Park can see some of the remains of all four kinds of settlements. Visitors are able to explore several of Mesa Verde's renowned cliff dwellings. Many of them take several hours to reach by foot. Signs along some of the paths point to trees and plants used by the ancestral Puebloan people. Visitors will also find the juniper and pinyon pine trees that make Mesa Verde green. Cliff Palace is the largest cliff dwelling in Mesa Verde and North America. It has 150 rooms. It is not easy to get to Cliff Palace. Visitors must climb down into the canyon on a narrow path with many steps. They must also climb down several ladders. But the trip is well worth the effort. Visitors can examine this beautiful structure made of stone and clay. Spruce Treehouse is the third largest cliff dwelling in Mesa Verde. It has 114 rooms. It also has 8 underground rooms called kivas. Pueblo Indian men gathered in the kivas for ceremonies.
Mesa Verde National Park occupies 21,000 hectares of land in Montezuma County, Colorado. About 500,000 people visit the park each year. Archaeologists working in Mesa Verde have recovered many objects that the ancient Pueblo people used, including tools and jewelry. Many of the objects can be seen in the visitors' center. However, human remains or any object from a burial area may not be touched or shown. This is to respect the wishes of the modern Puebloan people who live in the area today. Mesa Verde has been recognized as a special place. The United Nations named it as one of the first World Heritage Sites in 1978. Today's Pueblo Indians consider Mesa Verde a sacred place. And for visitors from around the world, it remains a place of mystery and beauty. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.
This is VOA News.